This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Marshall McLuhan famously said, "The medium is the message." Writer Joe McHugh agrees. You may go to Fox News for some conservative spin. Maybe you check out MSNBC for your liberal leanings. McHugh says that's not as important as the fact that you are getting your news from the television. In his new book, Slaying the Gorgon, The Rise of the Storytelling Industrial Complex, Joe McHugh explains how storytelling has been transformed in the modern age. Joe's been a storyteller himself for 30 years, worked in a variety of media, including radio. He'll be speaking at the Orange County Library tomorrow night in Hillsboro, starting at 6 o'clock, and he joins us now in the studio. Joe McHugh, welcome. Good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Tell us about this book, right? Why did you write it?
Well, coincidentally, here I'm in the studio, right in the middle of the heart of the tobacco industry. And some years ago, my wife and I, Paula, we had moved from Pennsylvania out to California, and we got to do some work with radio drama in the schools, which was new stuff. And one thing evolved into another where the state of California asked us to design a curriculum based on using radio drama to try to get kids not to smoke, use tobacco products. And so we came up with this great idea, these 10 episodes that were very short, but it was about a guy goes back in a time machine, finds Sir Walter Raleigh and bring him to the present and show him all the trouble tobacco's caused. But in the course of that, we had to develop an entire curriculum to support that this radio play. And I began to really look at the mechanisms being used by the tobacco industry to addict young people. And I was surprised by the sophistication. And then I began to see this idea that how they were using media and, in fact, paying for entire scenes to be placed into movies. So it wasn't product placement the way I had thought of it, you know, a pack of cigarettes on a table. It was writing a scene into a movie that had a narrative that dealt with some issue that the tobacco company wanted young people to think about differently.
So you got to thinking about how these various media use, what is it, the technique and the tactics of each media and how it conveys its message?
Well, you know, when I was working on that project, I'm really a message guy. I think of storytelling kind of in three ways. You could talk about it in three ways. And simply put, it would be message, medium, and magic. And so I'm a message guy in a lot of ways. I really care about the story I tell and what the sort of point is, and particularly because I've done so much storytelling for children over so many years. You know, Jack goes up the hill, kills the giant, but he kills him for the right reason or saves the girl and all this. So I was really looking at content issues and what was going on, particularly in a lot of the horror movies in the 1990s, the Scream movies, Wes Craven, these kind of things, Nightmare on Elm Street, and realizing I was looking at a narrative that had fundamentally changed from one in which, in fact, I used to call my presentation Cinderella Meets Freddy Krueger. Because it was about basically what I thought was a narrative that said the universe was, in fact, fair and just and good would win out to one that became very negative and very random and sort of pointless. But then as I was getting through the course of that and speaking to juvenile judges, conferences and things, I still knew there was something I wasn't getting. And somebody put McLuhan in my hands. You know, you're supposed to read him in the 60s, which I never did. And I started reading him.
Well, actually, nobody did. But if it wasn't for laughing, we'd know nothing about him. But go ahead.
You know. Right, right. And Woody Allen, right?
Yeah.
So I read him, and, you know, it was sort of my journey to Damascus. You know, the scales fell from my eyes. I began to really get what he was about. And he had a great line that really caught me. And he said, if you're going to argue over the relative quality or reliability of information or content, right, you know, is Fox News better or worse than MSNBC? He said, that's the slab of meat the burglar brings to distract the guard dog. It's the wrong question. The question is, did that child at 2 years and 5 years, or did you get your information from television, a billboard, a book, a conversation with a friend? I began to see that all these were, you know, a courtroom. These are all mediums in and by themselves. So this book primarily, I hope to write three books ultimately, one on message, one on medium and one on magic. But this is the book on mediums.
You talk about the storytelling industrial complex. What is that?
Well, we've taken something as basic as storytelling. I mean, when you strip away all the other aspects of storytelling we think now of as entertainment or passing on cultural values, but really when you strip it right down to its heart, it is about survival. It's both about physical survival. I start my book with a tsunami story in the tsunami there was this small group of people called the Morgan Sea Gypsies. And for 200 years or longer, they had been telling a story about the laboon, the great wave that eats people. And it was such a terrible wave that when it came, the other waves were afraid of it and would run away. So if they saw the other waves run away, they were to go up to the high part of this island where there was a temple and they would be safe. And that's exactly what happened. They survived where so many other people when the waves pulled back didn't. And to me, that encapsulated in what I really think storytelling is about. It is about our survival. Then when you talk about Moby Dick and these, you know, I heard the interview just before this about, you know, what these stories are about. There's really stories about trying to find the patterns of how things really do work. Not that we decide they work that way. It's not subjective. It's discovering how things really work. So that's what storytelling is about. Now, if you commercialize that process to the degree that we do, and I think you begin to lose track of its fundamental purpose. So are we transmitting our wisdom to the next generation? That's a fundamental thing we have to do as human beings, as primates. We have to do it consciously. The patterns we've learned, we have to explain it. And now I think money and other considerations, and particularly in the political realm, political power considerations are warping that fundamental purpose of storytelling.
Well, it's an interesting point. I mean, I think maybe you're suggesting, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or this is not part of the premise, but that we're in a way hardwired for storytelling and we can kind of take abstract context and concepts. We can hear about times that are not our own, places that we're not living in, put ourselves in that place, and then somehow through the recreation cope with what we're experiencing now. That seems to be a function that's in our heads from the day we're born. Then the soft wiring is the various media that we use. Are we sitting around a campfire retelling the story of the great victory over the enemy or how we captured the lion, or are we watching MSNBC to figure out what's wrong with the conservatives? And that change over time is changing our ability. Does it change our ability to cope, or is this just the new way to cope with the new environment?
Well, I put forward an idea, sort of a dualistic idea of human consciousness. And, you know, a lot of people talk left brain, right brain. There's other, you know, presentations. I have repurposed a few words, moved them out of their traditional use, but they're so effective to get across what I think I'm saying. So I talk that human beings basically have these two ways of knowing, one I call logos knowing and one I call mythos knowing. And mythos knowing essentially is your sensory knowing and everything that goes with sensation, including intuition and emotion. And then logos knowing is this trick we can break everything down to its component parts and string them together in time. So it's very important that time is an element of that. So we use both kinds of consciousness all the time, every day. But it's all about appropriateness. You know, do you use when I meet somebody in a social situation, I use a lot of mythos knowing. I don't look at their left eye. I don't check out what clothes are. You know, I'm not deconstructing.
Don't ask them for a CV to find out who they are. Their resume is hard.
But data, if I was a professional gambler or a police officer, I'd be using a lot more of my logos knowing. But we have this idea, which, of course, if you use just mythos knowing, you do allow yourself open to being duped. You know, the best con man, you know, you never met a con man you didn't like. Right. So they really understand that and they come in with a different thing. So those are the two consciousness. And what I'm saying is the mediums we choose are either inherently logos mediums or mythos mediums. So if a whole society begins to really adopt the book as a primary means of understanding the world, it is a very logos medium because of the way we physically read little squiggles of ink on paper. Where when then radio and photography and television, all these things have come along. These are really mythos mediums, and this is what McLuhan was getting at, and this is what I think, you know, I see. So as we adopt more and more of those mediums, they are inherently mythos mediums, so we will use more of our mythos consciousness in terms of how we make fundamentally important decisions.
So we're watching a TV show. It is presumably giving us data. There's information about the law that passed and the bill and its impact, and that's what you would call logos, information, data, hard facts. But the medium itself is engaging us at an emotional level, and all of that information is being washed into feelings about how things are, which may also play into our prejudices about the way things were. And so this new information, if it doesn't match our prejudice, because it's an essentially emotional medium, we're going to reject it or somehow fold it into our pre-existing ideas.
Right. Each form of knowing has wonderful virtues. But they also have this dark side. All right. So logos knowing, my father died of polio. Now we have a vaccine. That's a real logos knowing thing. You know, we were able to figure that all out. At the same time, we build 6 nuclear power plants on the coast of Japan because of an efficiency idea of logos knowing and suddenly have a huge disaster. So we can also destroy ourselves with logos knowing. And a lot of the environmental issues that we're looking at now, global warming, are really products of logos knowing, thinking. Mythos knowing, one of its dark sides is a move towards tribalism. because it is a sensation-based kind of medium. And so you really want to have a lot of affect with the people you're close to. So you're either a Harley driver or you're a, you know, somebody drives a Prius and does a lot of recycling, or you got a AK-47 under your bed. These are all sort of different tribal groups, and you're right. They begin to then, through the mediums, they can certainly find that tribal group and its platform. The reason I call it Slaying the Gorgon, if I could explain that, because I think it's a really useful metaphor. Most people know there were three Gorgons, and Medusa's the well-known Gorgon. And, you know, the snakes are here.
Snakehead, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at her, you turn to stone. So Perseus gets caught into a bargain that it was ill-advised, but he's promised to kill her. And, of course, how do you kill her? You can't look at her. You'll turn to stone. So he prays to Athena, the goddess of war but also of wisdom. And she comes and she tells him, polish your bronze shield so it shines like a mirror. So that's the metaphor, and that's what he does. And he's able to kill Medusa. So I use that because, to me, I think what the Greeks were saying, it's just my opinion, they were saying that Medusa is reality. And reality is inherently full of paradox. We never get it right, Frank. I mean, we try all the time. And it's one of the beauties of being human. We try. But there's always that side that doesn't work. You know, you're on the city council and they want to put a Walmart in your town, you know, and you got half the people, no, you can't, you're undermining all the old business. But the prices, I got people who really need it. You know, Afghanistan, huge Gorgon. No way to think through it. No outcome. So what happens is if you keep getting more data and you think more data is going to help you, what it really does is it turns you to stone. You lose the ability to act with confidence, with any sense of joy in the world, any meaning. You really are rendered into stone.
Do we go through these periods of anxiety then that we're experiencing now because of the crossover, the changeover in technology? I mean, we've been talking only about ancient technologies like radio, television, and print, so we haven't even mentioned the whole online universe and mobile universe, those platforms for receiving information. As those platforms change under our feet, does that create the kind of anxiety that turns us to stone, that paralyzes us?
Well, to finish the metaphor, and, you know, the shield is the power of myth. That's what I think it is. That's what Athena is saying. So if I can hold you a shield that tells you a mythic story, now it's never true, you know, but I think some people try to hold up pretty honest shields. I think some people have no compunction about holding up a funhouse mirror. But if I can hold up a mirror that tells you a story, that tells you you're a good person, you don't have to worry about it. You can act and, you know, life's good. Most human beings, I believe that's what they want. They really do not want to deal with the paradox. They don't want to be turned to stone. So the people who are willing to take that question on, who become the media, whatever we call the media, they're the people who hold up these shields. And they become enormously powerful in our society.
Celebrities. You talk about celebrities and their power as storytellers in our society.
Right. Well, they're the sort of the saints of the New Age. I do a lot of comparisons with the Middle Ages. You know, in the old days, you went into a cathedral, which is really a mythos-knowing technology, a medium. If you think about it, you come in, there's light, there's sound, there's incense, everything to trigger so that when the priest or the bishop gets up and tells you to support this warlord, you do it. Right. Well, today, the media today is the same thing. So you go in the old days, you got your sacred story in the cathedral. Today, you go in a Cineplex. You have your sacred bread and wine, your popcorn and soda. Right. In the old days, you would have a private screening or a private chapel. If you were a wealthy person, today you have a private screening room. We used to embed priests and monks with the forces that went into the New World from Spain and France. Today, we embed Fox News and CNN camera crews. I would even make the case that the old idea of the fourth estate was journalism now / entertainment / reenactment, whatever this thing is we call the fourth estate. But it used to have the three estates, the clergy and then the barons and then the commoners. I would make the case that the fourth estate is now the first estate. It is the one who legitimizes the warlord. This is the real power change, and it's a fundamental power change. You take the Glenn Beck when Sarah Palin had their a rally on the mall, got 65,000 people out. It's called Restore Honor. A lot of people thought it was great. You know, a lot of Christian mythology used in that, but this is get America back to its truth. And showing everybody, boy, you know, we really still have relevance as the old myth makers, the religious myth making story. And then Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart take a look at it and say, well, how about a month later we try? And they get 225,000 people. This is the shift. It's fundamental. So there is a conflict going on, but the conflict is in us in some ways because of these mediums, but really it's being driven by people that have a vested stake in mythos, winning, or logos.
But what about social media, though? It's a mass medium, but not controlled by any one particular operator.
Right, and I think that's the unknown quantity right now. It almost could be like, you know, maybe I'm stretching these metaphors too far. It could be almost like the Reformation taking place within the Christian church in Europe, you know, in the end of the Middle Ages. There are people trying to, in fact, use this media and find appropriate uses for it. But mostly I'm looking at, you know, the two issues, which is when you do have large players who are defining how what shields are shown to us and who gets to tell those stories. And that's why a lot of the battle over, you know, whether that bandwidth is going to be controlled by Comcast or these companies is a big story.
But the question is whether we need saints, whether we need isolated or a select few individuals to be our storytellers, or whether we can evolve socially and individually as a group of people who can get our stories from multiple sources and then finally be able to endure paradox and complexity.
I think we have this idea. That's kind of a rational, almost a logos idea. I think we think that. But in point of fact, there's some people have this thing that is almost indefinable we call charisma, or they're just – the microphone loves them. You know, think of FDR, you know, or Garrison Keillor, or we can name a lot of people. These people always do rise to the top, and whether it's Lady Gaga coming out dressed, you know, in a dress made of raw meat – but she has something that these new mythos-based mediums love, and they do become the ones who do drive the story.
Joe, pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
It's been a real pleasure, and thanks.
Joe McHugh, storyteller and writer. His new book, Slaying the Gorgon, The Rise of the Storytelling Industrial Complex, going to be at the Orange County Library tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. That's in Hillsborough. For more information about him, you go to our website, WUNC.org. And that's our program. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.